The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, Matt Crowley and Ben Cooper with a tale from the Old West on an episode of Mark Trail. We'll also hear about the case of Warren J. Lincoln on Police Reporter and Dead Man's Mirror on Incredible But True. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, the case of Warren J. Lincoln on Police Reporter and Dead Man's Mirror on Incredible But True. Right now, Matt Crowley and Ben Cooper star in A Tale from the Old West on an episode of Mark Trail as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Pep, the build-up wheat cereal with the prize in every package, invites you to share another thrilling adventure with Mark Trail.
Battling the raging elements, fighting the savage wilderness, striking at the enemies of man and nature, one man's name resounds from snow-capped mountains down across the sun-baked plains. Mark Trail! Guardian of the forest, protector of wildlife, champion of man and nature, Mark Trail.
It is shortly after dawn, and the silence of the Shoshone Indian Reservation in the Northwest is broken by the sound of horses' hooves. Lightfoot, chief of the Shoshones, rides out of the Indian village toward the east. Although he has seen the passing of 70 winters, he is erect in his saddle. Then suddenly another set of hoofbeats shatters the morning stillness. It is Dan Corbin, slim, nattily dressed general manager of Lightfoot Industries, jointly owned by the chief and his grandson, Robert.
What's the idea of sneaking out on me, Chief Lightfoot?
I sneak away from no man, Mr. Corbin. Our business is done.
But your grandson's coming here today. Shall I tell him you want to sell out your interest in Lightfoot Industries? Break up the biggest oil and timber combine in the Northwest?
Yes. This is true.
Then at least tell me why so that I can report to him.
Very well. Many days travel from here. There is a canyon known to no eyes but mine. The waters are clear and cool. The grass thick and rich. And upon it I have seen buffalo feed.
Buffalo? There haven't been any around here for half a century.
Because the men who squeeze oil from ground and strip timber from hills have driven them off. Well, I, Lightfoot, chief of the Shoshone, shall bring them back.
You want me to tell this to your grandson?
Yes. Tell him this is why I would sell all that I possess. That I have not much time left. That before I die, I must put the wealth back into the earth from where it came. Tell him this, Mr. Thorne.
You old... You're right. You haven't got much time left. In fact, you may not even come back from this ride.
And so Chief Lightfoot rides away into an adventure that's chock full of thrills and excitement.
Thrills and excitement that'll be fun to hear and would be even more fun to share. That is, if you're in shape to share the excitement. If you feel fit to get the fun out of it. You know, you want to feel fit for fun. So make Kellogg's Pep the main part of your breakfast every single day. Kellogg's Pep, the build-up wheat cereal. Wheat in its most delicious form. Toasted flakes of wheat, ready to eat, fun to eat. Wonderful with milk and sugar. Kellogg's Pep helps to make you feel fit for fun because it packs a powerhouse of food elements you need to build up strength, build up energy, build up strong bones and steady nerves. And listen, every single package of Pep also packs a prize, a handsome prize that I'll tell you about before the show is over. And remember, P.E.P. means more than Pep, the build-up wheat cereal. P.E.P. also means prize in every package. So if you want to have your fun and eat it too, ask your mother when she goes shopping, bring me a package of Kellogg's Pep. That's Kellogg's Pep!
Hours after Chief Lightfoot has left his reservation, two riders leisurely cross the plains, their blood warmed by the noonday sun. They are Mark Trail and his young friend Scotty. They do not know that Lightfoot has left his village, for they are on their way to the Shoshone Indian Reservation at the express invitation of Lightfoot himself, who is Mark's old friend.
You mean buffalo grazed here, Mark?
Why, years ago, Scotty. They would have covered this plain for as far as your eye could see. Hey, what are you taking your rifle out of your saddle sling for?
Just imagining, Mark. I can see them now.
Ha ha, you've got a vivid imagination.
It must have been...
What is it, Scotty?
There.
Say, what are you shooting at?
There in the grove of trees. I thought I saw a movement,
you
a deer.
You thought? You know better than that, Scotty. Never shoot at a movement, only an object. Suppose there had been somebody...
Mark, what was that?
Voice from that grove.
Mark, you don't think...
I don't know, Scotty, but we better find out fast. Scotty, do you see anyone?
No, Mark. I hope...
Come on, Scotty. Oh, whoa, whoa, boy. Chief Lightfoot.
Mark Trail.
Scotty, tie up the horses. Chief, what happened? Did that shot hit you?
No, Mark. I was struck down by my ears. No bullet.
What happened?
My ankle is swollen. Broken, I fear.
Well, let me see. Oh, I'm sorry, Chief. No, I don't think it's broken. Only sprained.
And there's still strength in these old bones.
Well, how did this happen, Chief?
I was riding when suddenly my pony reared and threw me.
I see. Hey, Scotty.
Yes, Mark.
Try to find the Chief's pony while I bind his ankle.
Okay.
This will hurt, Chief.
No pain of the flesh could be as deep as the pain of my spirit.
Well, that doesn't sound like your letter to me, Chief. You were pretty happy about the idea of restoring this land to a place where the Shoshone could live as they had in the past. No, I'm sorry.
That was before I had heard the tongue of Mr. Corbin.
Mr. Corbin?
Yes, the man who manages my grandson's wealth and mine as well. He has set my grandson against me, and there is evil feeling.
Mark, can you come here? I found the chief's pony.
Just a minute, Scotty. That feel better now, Chief?
Yes.
All right, then. I'll help Scotty with the horses. And we'll have you back at the TP and facing Mr. Corbin and your grandson in no time. What's the matter, Scotty? Can't you handle a horse yourself?
It's not that, Mark. I called you over to look at something. Oh, now, easy, boy. See? Blood oozing from under the saddle blanket of the chief's horse.
Loosen the cinch under his belly, Scotty.
All right.
Steady, boy, steady. We're not going to hurt you.
Okay, Mark.
Let's see what's happened to your back. Easy, boy, easy, easy.
Holy mackerel, Mark. His back's all cut up.
Well, look. Sharp stones embedded in the saddle.
Gosh.
Now, that's an old frontier trick. To make a horse buck, Scotty. The weight of the rider causes the stones to dig into the horse and he bucks.
Then it was no accident the chief was thrown.
No, Scotty, it wasn't. Someone wants Chief Lightfoot out of the way.
Who?
I'm afraid to answer that, Scotty. I only hope it isn't his own grandson.
I tell you, Mr. Lightfoot, if you let your grandfather split up Lightfoot Industries, you'll be ruined.
Oh, I wouldn't say it's that drastic, Corbin. I'd still be a rich man.
But, Mr. Lightfoot...
Besides, when I talk to him, I'm sure he'll see how foolish this entire idea is. Now, quiet, here comes my daughter.
Papa, this is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So you like the Indian reservation?
It's just like the storybooks I've read in school. All that's missing is the buffalo. No wonder Grandpa wants to put them back. If I were living here, I'd want them back, too. Indians and buffalo kind of go together.
You hear that, Corbin?
Mm.
First time she's ever been on a reservation in her entire 13 years, and already she's acting like the Indians of long ago.
Well, might be that this affects a lot of people that way.
Papa, look. Some men riding into the village.
Why, yes. Say, one of them looks like...
It's the chief.
And he's been hurt. Come on, let's see what's the matter.
So, son of my son, I look on your face again.
Yes, my grandfather. But please don't try to talk. You're hurt.
It is nothing. I suppose the man Corbin has told you what I wished to do.
Yes, he has, but we can talk of all that later.
We will talk of it now.
Chief, perhaps I should leave.
No, Mark. I wish you to hear this, too. After all, you are blood brother to our tribe.
Grandfather...
Wait, wouldn't... my grandson. Hear me out. Before you talk against my wishes, I ask that you do one thing for me.
And what is that?
I have told Mark Trail of the way to the hidden canyon where buffalo yet graze. I want you to look on them once with your own eyes.
But, Grandfather...
Mark will guide you to this valley of peace. He knows the lore of the forests and the plains as well as the sun itself. Go with him. Then return and talk to me. Tell me then that you wish to leave my wealth in smoke and the stone of the cities. Will you do this, son of my firstborn?
All right, Grandfather. I will go. Now.
Trail. How many more miles to this canyon?
We're almost there, Corbin.
You know, Mr. Trail, I confess I'm glad my grandfather asked me to do this and to take Nancy along.
I'm happy you are, Mr. Lightfoot. See that bend up ahead?
Yes.
Well, when we round it, we should see the first view of the Chief's Canyon.
Well, then let's hurry.
All right. Come on, Mr. Corbin. Scotty and Nancy can follow on the rear. Well, Mr. Lightfoot?
It's gorgeous, Mr. Trail. Awe-inspiring. Look, Corbin.
Yeah. How do we get down?
We'll consider that tomorrow morning. We'll stay here for the night.
Oh, I can't get over it. But the buffalo?
We'll have to look for them. They won't look for us. Hey, Scotty.
Yes, Mark?
You and Nancy unsaddle your horses and tend to them. We're bedding down here for the night. And tomorrow, we go down into Buffalo Canyon.
Hours before it's dark.
I should help Mark get wood for the fire.
Let Daddy do it. He's enjoying himself.
Aren't you?
Like I never have before. Oh, look, there's that cave we passed with the overhanging rock. I'm going in.
Well, wait a minute, Nancy. Don't go in without me.
Think I'm afraid of the dark?
Nancy, come on up. There are paw prints all around this cave. It's some sort of an animal's den.
Animal?
Look out, Nancy. That overhanging rock. Nancy, are you all right?
Scotty, what happened?
That rock, it fell and locked the entrance to the cave.
Scotty, we're sealed in. We're sealed.
Easy, Nancy. The others must have heard it. They'll get us out. And we have plenty of air. Lights coming in from the top of the entrance.
Scotty, there's something in here.
What?
It's just Nancy.
Keep still.
Scotty, what was that?
The growl of a mountain lion.
In the inky blackness of the block cave, Nancy and Scotty cringe against the rocks, waiting for the mountain lion to strike. In a moment, we will continue, so stand by. Trapped in a cave with a hungry mountain lion. Say, wonder what'll happen to Nancy and Scotty. We'll soon find out.
But first, the makers of Kellogg's Pep, the build-up wheat cereal, ask you to listen to this important message. Boy Scout Week begins today. Marking the 40th anniversary of the Boy Scouts of America, Scout Week will be celebrated in every city, every town, and most villages by 2,300,000 Boy Scouts and Scout leaders. Their birthday theme, Strengthen the Arm of Liberty, will be portrayed in pageants, demonstrations, public ceremonies, and parents' night gatherings in every state of the Union. During Boy Scout Week, friends and parents will be invited to attend troop meetings and see for themselves how the Boy Scouts of America actually put democracy to work. Boy Scout Week finds the organization at the midpoint of its two-year crusade to strengthen the arm of liberty. As part of this program, the Boy Scouts of America seek to bring more boys into their ranks and give them the rich experience of scouting under volunteer leaders of the highest character. Why don't you get in touch with your nearest unit of the Boy Scouts of America? And now back to the adventures of Mark Trail. Brought to you by Kellogg's Pep, the build-up wheat cereal. Kellogg's Pep, the cereal with the prize in every package. And I'll tell you about the swell prize in your Pep package before the show's over.
On the rim of Buffalo Canyon in the Northwest, Mark's young friends Scotty and Nancy Lightfoot have been trapped in a mountain lion's den by a cave-in. Mark and Robert Lightfoot, Nancy's father, run up to the den and see Dan Corbin standing there.
Corbin, what happened?
We heard a crash.
Your daughter, Mr. Lightfoot, and that kid. They're trapped in a cave behind that big rock.
My daughter.
I saw them go in, and before I could say anything, that rock started to crack and give.
Well, give me a boost up the top of that rock.
I told you that trip was foolish, Mr. Lightfoot. Now it may become tragic.
It will be if you just stand around and talk. Now help me up the top of the rock.
Trail, if anything
Keep quiet, Mr. Lightfoot. Scotty! Scotty, can you hear me?
Yes, Mark.
Are you both all right?
We're not hurt, but there's a mountain lion in this cave.
Mountain lion?
Trail, if my daughter...
Shut up!
I told you, Mr. Lightfoot...
Scotty! Scotty, now listen to me! Fire!
I know, Mark. I've been burning papers, rocks, anything. But I'm running out of stuff.
All right, Scotty. Hoard your fire.
Corbin, run back to the camp. Get the oil we brought along for the portable stove. Light it. You get our supply of rifle shells. Break them and spill the powder in a pile. And hurry, both of you. Hurry before it's too late.
All right, Trail. Here's the oil.
Hand it up. Scotty! How's your flame holding out?
Getting low, Mark.
It's coming closer, Scotty.
Kick some fire toward him, Scotty.
He moves back again, Mark.
All right, now listen. You're not completely sealed in. There's a hole up here.
I know, Mark.
Good. Now take off your jacket. Tell Nancy to take hers off, too.
All right, Mark.
I'm going to pour this can of oil through the hole. Sop up all of it you can with your jackets.
All right.
Okay, here it comes. You getting it, Scotty?
Yes, Mark.
Get the jackets drenched in oil. Then light one of them. The two of them should be enough to keep that line at bay for another hour. And by that time, we'll blast you out with gunpowder.
Goes our homemade stick of dynamite.
But Trail, won't the blast hurt Scotty and Nancy?
They're protected in the cave, Mr. Lightfoot. It won't be much of a blast. They're just enough to shake up the rocks blocking the entrance.
Oh, you're going
to
touch it off.
Hand me that rifle. Thanks. Now, we'll all walk back about 20 paces.
Ready, Scotty?
It worked.
They're coming out.
Trail! The mountain lion.
Mark.
It's okay, Scotty. It's okay. You kept your head all right.
Oh, Nancy. Nancy, let me hold you. Oh, darling, you'll never be in danger again. Never. I'm calling this trip off right now. No, it's no use, Nancy. My mind is made up.
I told you it was my fault. I shouldn't have run in there like a shoal.
Never would have happened if we hadn't been in this godforsaken wilderness.
Corbin's right. Nancy, you can't...
But, Papa, you promised to your grandfather, my great-grandfather.
A promise doesn't mean as much to me as your life.
Nancy's alive, Mr. Lightfoot.
Yeah, no thanks to you and Trail.
That's not fair, Mr. Corbin. If it weren't for them...
We wouldn't have been here.
Mr. Trail didn't tell us to take this trip, and neither did Scotty. Look, Papa, be fair. Besides, we're right on the rim of Buffalo Canyon.
Well, all right. One more day. Because it won't make any difference. I'll certainly oppose the chief's plan to throw a fortune away on this wilderness after what's happened today.
Whatever you say, Dad. But just keep remembering, I'm the only one to blame. This whole horrible accident was all my fault.
Did you put out the fire, Scotty?
Yes, Mark. Not even smoke left.
The others asleep?
Sure. You know, it was decent of Nancy to say the whole thing was her fault.
You're right. Particularly when it wasn't.
What?
That rock didn't fall. It was pried loose.
Pried?
Yes. I saw the marks on the rock structure where it split. Wood embedded in the gravel. And a few yards away, a long wooden limb. The end smashed and matted.
But who would have...
Well, I was with Mr. Lightfoot, and you were with Nancy.
Mr. Corbin?
Scotty, from now on, if the four of us aren't together, we don't take our eyes off Mr. Corbin.
Well, there they are, Mr. Lightfoot. Buffalo.
Yes, buffalo.
Huh?
But there aren't very many, Mr. Trail. How many would you say there are?
Oh, about 70.
But, Trail, I thought my grandfather said there were more.
Probably up the canyon away if you want to ride.
Not me.
He didn't ask you.
Scotty.
Sorry.
Papa, please, let. Think of it. These are the animals who were the food and the shelter and the clothes to our forefathers.
All right, Nancy. I can at least pay that much homage to them. Let's go, Trail.
Count me out. I'll stay here and admire these 70.
All right, Mr. Corbin. We'll leave the pack horses with you. The four of us will be back before sundown.
Trail, where are you?
Well, Chief Lightfoot.
Mr. Corbin.
You made a quick recovery.
Where are the others? What have you done to them?
Me? They're out looking for more buffalo. They weren't satisfied with that small herd there.
When I saw the pack...
Wait a minute. What do you mean, what did I do to them?
Sometimes the tongue speaks in haste.
And that foot, it's still bandaged. You must have something pretty important to say to make this long ride that way.
I will wait for the return of my grandson.
But I won't. Now get off that horse.
Let go of that bridle.
Oh, no, Chief. You're coming down. Off that horse.
Let me.
Easy, Chief. I can break your bones like sticks. What's this in your robe? A telegram?
Yes.
Well, maybe it'll be interesting.
To my grandson.
Not to me.
It tells that you are a thief and have stolen money from the Lightfoot companies.
Well, save me the trouble of reading it.
This is why you did not wish me to dispense of my wealth. Such a transaction would have revealed you for the fork-tongued liar you are.
Right, Chief. But you'll never have a chance to tell your grandson.
What are you going to do?
See those buffalo? I'm going to ride behind them. Scare them into a stampede.
You will accomplish nothing by such foolish action.
Oh, but I will. First, the butt of my gun. Now, Chief. Now to get those buffalo stampeding right over you.
Dan Corbin rides out wildly firing his gun. The frightened buffalo stampede in the direct path of the unconscious Chief Lightfoot. In a moment, we will continue. So keep listening.
Well, here it is, the whole story about that prize in every package of Kellogg's Pep. A statuette. That's right, a handsome, brightly colored statuette of a cowboy, Indian, football, baseball, basketball player, or an animal of most any description. Your box of Pep may contain any one of 18 different statuettes. Trade them with your friends. Collect them. Each statuette stands on its own pedestal, so you can stand them up in toy villages, move them around in games. And remember, you don't send in a box top or wait for your prize. And you don't pay a single penny extra. Just look inside your box of Pep and find your bright, colorful statuette. And there's a chance your prize may be a Pep turbojet model plane with an aluminum jet-type wing, all ready to cut out, assemble, and fly. So tell Mother to pick the package with P.E.P. on the front. P.E.P. for Kellogg's Pep, the build-up wheat cereal. P.E.P. for prize in every package. Yes, to have your fun and eat it, too.
Pick Pep, the prize package. With the powerful powerhouse punch, pick Pep.
Unaware that the herd of stampeding buffalo are headed straight in the direction of Chief Lightfoot, Mark, Scotty, Mr. Lightfoot, and Nancy are riding back to camp. Suddenly, they hear the ominous rumble of thundering hoofs. They spur their horses and race ahead.
Look, Mark, the herd's stampeding.
They're headed away from us. Where's Corbin?
There he is. Trail by those trees.
Come on. Whoa, boy. Whoa. Corbin, what happened?
Oh, it was horrible, horrible.
What are you talking about?
Your grandfather, Mr. Lightfoot. He's out there on the ground.
What?
Oh, no.
He came riding up a little while ago. His ankle was better. Said he wanted to see how you like this land.
But what happened?
And the buffalo. He rode right into the herd. I warned him not to. And suddenly a big bull charged his horse.
Oh?
There's nothing else to tell. The horse threw the chief and the bull was on him before I could do anything.
This place is a canyon of misfortune.
Scotty, ride out and look for the chief.
Right.
I'll go with you, Scotty.
All that's come of this idea is evil. He wanted me to help in restoring nature to this land. Look what it's done to him.
Nature didn't do anything, but man did. And that man is Dan Corbin.
What? What do you mean, Trail?
Nature is my business. And I know that never, never under any provocation will a buffalo charge a mounted man. They accept horse and rider as a member of the herd. Why, it was on that principle that the Indians hunted the buffalo.
Trail, is this true?
Look at him, Lightfoot. Ask him about the rock slide that trapped Nancy and Scotty.
Mark. Oh, boy. Here's the chief.
Scotty, you shouldn't have moved him.
He insisted, Mr. Trail.
Grandfather.
Son of my son.
Chief, don't talk.
I have come to the end of my time.
Please, Grandfather, be quiet. I can't understand how you lived through that stampede.
He was in a small ravine, Mark. It gave him some protection.
Scotty, the chief wants to talk.
I lived, my grandson, only to tell you that this man is evil. This Corbin.
Now listen, I
won't
stand.
Corbin, or my rifle will shut you up forever. I know now, my
then you will not listen to Corbin's counsel, but only to your heart.
I shall, Grandfather.
Mark, will you help my grandson make this restoration of my people's land the finest in the West?
Yes, Chief. And it will be the best and most satisfying job that I've ever had.
Good. Now my heart is light. I can pass from this earth in peace.
Well, Scotty, I feel like a nice, lazy hunting trip after all this. Ducks, maybe. Why, I can just see myself...
Mark will go duck hunting on Wednesday, all right, and he'll take Cherry, too. But I'd bet he'd leave Cherry home if he knew the perils they face when they run into a killer. Learn all about the killer with a battery gun by tuning in same time, same station on Wednesday to...
Mark Trail!
Battling the raging elements, fighting the savage wilderness, striking at the enemies of man and nature, one man's name resounds from snow-capped mountains down across the sun-baked plains.
Mark Trail!
Remember to tune in then next Wednesday when Mark Trail will again be brought to you by the build-up wheat cereal, Kellogg's Pep.
This program is entirely fictitious. The resemblance of any name, personality, or incident to an actual person or event is merely coincidental. This program came from New York. Mark Trail also appears in the comics of many of America's leading newspapers. Look for it daily and Sunday. Matt Crowley portrays Mark Trail and Ben Cooper is Scotty. Mark Trail is directed by Drex Hines. Today's story was written by Palmer Thompson. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
You're listening to The Golden Age of Radio, featuring an episode of Mark Trail, first broadcast on radio on February 6, 1950, starring Matt Crowley and Ben Cooper. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When The Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, the case of Warren J. Lincoln on an episode of Police Reporter. But first, we hear about the Dead Man's Mirror on Incredible But True, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
In the annals of the strange and the incredible, death has always played a significant role. For it is inevitable that the great mystery which has intrigued men's minds since the beginning of time should itself be surrounded by countless minor mysteries. Of all of these, none is more curious, none more difficult to explain than the tantalizing story of Geoffrey Derosier's mirror.
Geoffrey Derosier was dying. He lay in a ward at the War Memorial Hospital in Sault Ste. Marie. His nurse, Adeline Knoop, hovering near his bed, knew that the end could not be far off. Indeed, she thought that consciousness had already slipped away. But then, to her astonishment, Geoffrey Derosier opened his eyes and his lips moved feebly.
A mirror. Bring me a mirror.
Hastening to obey what was unquestionably his last wish, Nurse Knoop found the mirror and brought it to him. It was just an ordinary mirror, a rectangular piece of glass without a frame. He took it in his trembling hands and held it before his face.
Madame, I'm dying!
Nurse Noop and three other occupants of the ward heard that wild, frantic cry. They saw him throw the mirror down on the steel table that stood beside his bed. But it did not break. It lay where it had fallen. And Geoffrey Derosier slumped weakly back on his pillows. But before he lost consciousness completely, Derosier murmured one final mysterious statement. And every person in the room heard it.
That mirror, you won't be able to pick it up.
Later that morning, when the body of Geoffrey Derosier had been removed, Nurse Noop assisted in preparing the bed for a new patient. And then the mirror, still lying on the table, caught her eye. She bent to pick it up. A moment later, her face suddenly white, she hurried out of the room and summoned an intern who was passing in the corridor.
Please,
when she told him her story, he followed her to the bed, chuckling with amusement.
I want to show it to you.
Relax, nurse. I don't think I'd be too upset about this.
But I tell you, it won't budge.
You've heard of an E-gay fix, haven't you? The late patient planted the idea in your mind and it stayed there, that's all. You said you wouldn't be able to pick up the mirror, and lo and behold, you can't pick it up.
Let's see you pick it up.
Good Lord! For some strange reason, it stuck to the table.
And it remained stuck for 24 hours. During that time, practically every doctor and nurse on the floor tried to move it. And throughout that whole day and night, there was scarcely a person in the War Memorial Hospital who was not recalling, with a shudder, those strange last words of Geoffrey de Rossier. The following morning, Nurse Adeline Nuke came back on duty. Her first act, when she entered the ward, was to approach the bedside table. The occupants of the other beds watched attentively as she made one final effort to remove the mirror.
I just touched it. Only it flew high in the air.
After that, the mirror was carefully examined. No chemical or adhesive substance was found, either on it or on the surface of the table. Efforts were made to force it to readhere to the table, but they were unsuccessful. It still remains a mystery. A mystery incredible, but true.
Ladies and gentlemen, last year's traffic death toll was 37,500, a 7% increase over 1950. The National Safety Council believes that the best way to promote safety on the road is for each of us to know and obey traffic laws, to read and heed traffic signs. So be careful. The life you save may be your own.
This broadcast inaugurates a new radio series, True Murder Mysteries, brought to you by the Police Reporter. Carefully planned crimes which were solved by intelligent effort and clever detective work. The cases we dramatize for you actually happened. The following true murder mystery is an example.
The evening of April 28, 1923, a middle-aged man and his wife were sitting in the living room of their modest home in Aurora, Illinois.
Sam, Mr. Lincoln was nowhere around today again.
Well, what of it? Well,
there's something wrong over to that house, and I think someone ought to look into
it. Always poking your nose into other people's business, aren't you?
Well, he's a nice man, and he's always been a good neighbor. 4 days and no sign of him. It don't look natural.
Why don't you go over and see? Or maybe you'll feel better, huh?
Well, I did call over the back fence this afternoon, but nobody answered. I'm going to call the police.
No, not tonight, you're not. I don't want my sleep all messed up because of a lot of cops.
Well, if I don't see Mr. Lincoln around in the morning, I'll call them.
Oh, go as far as you like, then. Go on.
The woman saw no sign of Mr. Lincoln the following morning, and she did call the police. A few minutes later, an officer stood on her porch.
Are you the woman who phoned the police?
Yes, I am. Come in. There's something happened next door, and I think it ought to be looked into.
Well, what seems to be the trouble?
Well, up to about a month ago, a Mr. Lincoln was living there with his wife and brother-in-law.
Go on.
Well, Mr. Lincoln was a nice man. But that wife and brother-in-law, well, I'd hate to think my husband had married into that kind of a family.
I don't think you like them.
Well, who could like people like that? All the time we've lived here, they haven't done nothing but fight.
They've been fighting you?
Oh, no. The wife and brother-in-law fought the husband. Well, he was a nice man, too. Worked in his greenhouses and had a nice business.
Why should this concern the police?
I haven't come to that part yet. About a month ago, I noticed it was quiet around the house. It didn't seem natural. And when I saw Mr. Lincoln, I asked him where his wife was. And he said she and her brother had gone away for good, and he was glad of it. Well, last Thursday night, he come running into our house all excited. Said his wife had been telephoning and writing that she and her brother were going to come and kill him.
I still don't see where the police come in.
Well, Mr. Lincoln's been missing for 4 days now, and I'm afraid something's happened to him.
Well, what do you want me to do?
Go over to that house and investigate. Mr. Lincoln wouldn't go off like that without saying a word to anyone or seeing that his greenhouses are being taken care of.
It does sound kind of funny. Let's go over there and take a look.
We can go out this back door. Now, just follow me. This gate goes from our backyard to theirs. Just step right through here.
Thanks. Keeps his place nice, don't he?
Yes, he was one of those men that's always doing something.
Doesn't oil his gate, does he?
Oh, what's that white thing over there?
Why, it's a man's nightshirt. There's blood on it.
Oh, I knew it.
Ever see this before, this Indian club?
Yes, Mrs. Lincoln's brother used to have two of them. I've seen him lots of times swinging them around in the backyard here.
Something's happened here. I'm sure of it. There's blood on this Indian club, too. Let's break into the house.
Well, you can go in there if you want to, but you won't catch me going in that house. No telling what you might find.
The officer did find many strange things in the house. Everything in Mr. Lincoln's bedroom had been tossed around. Clothes and the contents of a bureau had been strewn on the floor. There was blood over everything, but no body could be found. Immediately, the police started a hunt for Lincoln's remains, and detectives tried to trace Mrs. Lincoln and her brother. 4 days later, a man walked into the Aurora Police Headquarters.
Captain Sutherland?
Yes?
My name is Warren J. Lincoln.
What?
Warren J. Lincoln.
Oh, sit down, Mr. Lincoln.
Thank you.
Well?
I saw all about my supposed murder in the Chicago papers, so I came down to tell you that there's been a mistake.
Now, what's all this about? Where have you been?
Well, I had to go to Chicago on business.
Maybe you can explain that bloody nightshirt in the Indian club.
Sure.
And all those clothes of yours tossed around the room in your house.
Well, it was a sudden call, and I had to leave in a hurry. I guess I did leave things in a mess, but a mussy room and a few blood stains don't make a murder, you know.
Oh, but when the blood happens to be chicken blood, it makes it look a little phony.
How'd you find that out?
Had it analyzed. And maybe you can set us straight on that, Mr. Lincoln. Where did that chicken blood come from?
Why, I killed a chicken, that's all.
Your nightshirt with an Indian club? You have to think of a better one than that.
Well, that's all there was to it.
Frankly, I don't believe you, Mr. Lincoln. Just where are your wife and brother-in-law?
I don't know.
Well, when they wrote and telephoned you, where were they?
Chicago.
Where are the letters they sent?
I burned them.
How many times did they telephone you?
Oh, two or three times. I've forgotten.
And those calls presumably came from Chicago, too?
Yes.
Well, that's funny. The telephone company has no record of any long-distance calls to your number for over 2 months.
Well, they must be mistaken.
The telephone company isn't in the habit of making mistakes, Lincoln. Now, just where are your wife and brother-in-law?
I don't know.
Then why'd you say they were in Chicago?
Well, that seemed to me like the place they would go.
I see. Well, you just made up that story about the threatening letters and telephone calls.
Yes.
Why?
To keep the neighbors from talking.
Oh, come on, Lincoln. Think of a better one. Where are your wife and brother-in-law?
I don't know.
Hey, do you want me to tell you where they are?
Yes.
They're dead.
What makes you think that?
Stands to reason. Where else could they be? Why should they leave a soft spot like your house? Nothing to do and you to make a living for them.
I put them out.
Ah, don't make me laugh, Lincoln. You were afraid of them. All your neighbors testify to that. Your wife and her brother had you buffaloed and they knew it. They must have seen the papers and know that we're looking for them. Why don't they show up?
They're afraid to show up. Would you give yourself up if you knew the police were looking for you for murder?
If I hadn't done it, you bet I would. I'm going to hold you, Lincoln, on suspicion. I'll give this story to the newspaper boys so that every paper in the Middle West will be full of it. If your wife and brother-in-law are alive, they'll read it and we'll hear from them. But until we do, you'll stay in jail.
In the week which followed, the reappearance of Lincoln was treated as a newspaper sensation. But headlines, police hunts, and clever detective work brought no sign of the missing Mrs. Lincoln nor her brother. So the police captain and Detective Sloan, the man who had charge of the case, called on Lincoln in his cell.
Well, Lincoln, we haven't heard from your wife or brother-in-law.
Oh, they're just hiding out to get me in trouble.
Have you told us everything you know about this, Lincoln?
The captain said everything, Lincoln.
Well, no, I didn't tell you everything.
Why not?
Well, I was afraid you wouldn't believe it.
Well, let's have it now.
I didn't tell the whole truth about the trip to Chicago. I didn't go there on business. I was kidnapped.
And who kidnapped you?
My wife and her brother. They took me to Chicago and kept me there and made me pay them to let me go.
How much did you pay them?
$3,000.
In cash or with a check?
Cash.
Where'd you get this money? You didn't draw it from the bank because we've looked up your account.
I just had it, that's all.
So they dragged you up to Chi to take it away from you, eh?
Yes.
Lincoln, listen. I've heard all the pipe dreams I'm going to hear from you. Now, where are your wife and brother-in-law?
I don't know.
You do know. You killed them.
I didn't.
Yes, you did. Now, where are they?
I don't know, I tell you. I don't know.
You killed them. You know you did. And you're going to hang for
it. You can't hang me. If you can't find enough of their bodies to show they're dead.
Then you did kill them.
No. No.
You did. You just said you did.
Oh, supposing I did kill them. You can't do anything to me until you find enough of them to prove it.
What'd you do with them?
I cut them up and burned them in the furnace.
Yeah, that furnace examined right away, Sloan.
It won't do you any good. I got it all cleaned out.
It's almost impossible to burn a head in a furnace.
I didn't put the heads in the furnace.
Where did you put them?
Find out yourself.
I'll listen.
I won't tell you.
Listen, you're smart enough to know that sooner or later we can break you down.
All we got to do is keep after you, and sooner or later you're going to tell.
Even if I do tell you, it won't do you any good.
Why not?
I got them all covered with quicklime.
Quicklime?
Yes, quicklime. Do you think I took any chances? They'll be all burned up by now. I've been planning this for years, ever since I got married. I've been picked at, nagged at, and fought with until I've gone crazy, I guess. Crazy enough to make up my mind to kill those two. I planned every step. Now I've done it, and you can't prove a thing on me. I've committed two murders, and you can't hang me for them. The joke's on you, Captain. I'm clear. Do you hear? Clear.
Where'd you put the heads?
In one of the concrete flower boxes. I put them in there and filled it with quicklime, and then covered the box with cement.
Well, Lincoln, that's just where you made your mistake. An expert can get that concrete off without any trouble, and if there's anything left of those heads, you're done for.
It looked a great deal as though Warren J. Lincoln had gotten away with it. As a forlorn hope, Detective Sloan decided to have a try at the flower box anyway. So he and the captain went down to Lincoln's house to have the box opened.
Well, it looks like we're beaten, Sloan.
You never can tell, Captain. Wait till Joe gets the cement chipped away from that flower box. How are you doing, Joe?
Pretty good, Mr. Sloan. I'll have all this chipped away in a couple of minutes.
I've never seen a case yet where there wasn't some kind of a slip-up. If I don't overlook any bets, something always breaks in my favor. That's why I'm not letting this flower box get past me.
It's our last hope, even if it is a pretty slim one.
Mr. Sloan, I got all the cement up.
See anything in there?
I don't want to look. I'm not used to things like this.
All right, Joe. I'll look. Well, what do you think, Captain?
There's plenty of lime in there, all right. But I don't think it's quicklime.
You're right. It isn't quicklime. It's burnt lime. I told you we had a break coming. Lincoln put the wrong kind of lime on those two heads, and they're not burned up. We'll be able to identify them without any trouble.
Lincoln is as good as hanged right now.
Only part of Detective Sloan's prophecy came true. Lincoln was convicted, but he didn't hang. He was sentenced to the Illinois State Penitentiary for life.
Now you've heard our first murder story. We hoped you liked it. In our next broadcast, we will tell you another true murder mystery, a very puzzling case that was solved by scientific methods that put your fictive detectives to shame, and every word of it actually true. Listen for our next murder mystery, brought to you by the Police Reporter. This is a Radio Release production.
Your linoleum needs extra protection. Give it that protection with Johnson's self-polishing glow coat and see what a difference it makes in your daily work and in the appearance of your kitchen. As a matter of fact, it's when your floors get this extra punishment that you can see what a wonderful polish glow coat really is. It has a flexible film, which means that it wears evenly without chipping. It has a lasting luster, gives floors sparkling beauty that brings out and preserves the fresh colors of the linoleum. And glow coat is economical because a little goes a long way. Glow coat is self-polishing, needs no rubbing or buffing. You simply apply and let dry. But for glow coat results, be sure you get the one and only Johnson self-polishing glow coat.
When I was sick, lying in my bed, my friends forgot me, thought I was dead. For after all my heart traveling, things about coming my way. dressed as I am. I ain't got no money, all in a jam. But after all my hard traveling, things about coming my way. When I had money, friends from miles around. Now I ain't got no money, friends can't be found. But after all my hard traveling, things about coming my way.
Golden Age of Radio on WMKY and Yak Taylor with Things About Coming My Way from 1941. We also heard an episode of Police Reporter entitled The Case of Warren J. Lincoln and Dead Man's Mirror on Incredible But True. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows, on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at this same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at wmky.org.